Why don't you just start off by introducing yourself? Who you are, where you're from, how you'd describe yourself?
Yeah. Well, I'm Duncan McCallum, sometimes known on the interweb as Strepeter.
Tell me about Strepeter. What does that mean? Why did you pick that name? That's the name that I first knew you as when I came across your photographs.
Well, it's the Gaelic for climber, which is a bit of a misnomer. I'm not really a climber, more a hill walker, but that's the name I started using on the net, and it sort of stuck.
There is another way that Duncan could describe himself, and that's a photographer. He's not a pro, but only in the sense he's never made a living from his photographs. He's good, really good. And when you look through the photos on his website, there are hundreds and hundreds of them. You can see a life lived in the mountains, every weekend, year after year after year. Pictures of mountains in all seasons and all moods.
When I was working, you know, the weekends were gold dust, so I went to make the most of them and quite often stay out over Saturday, Sunday.
What were you working as at the time?
I worked for the post office, the postal driver, which you can imagine you'd want to escape from as often as possible. I was either going into the hills or getting pissed, so I chose the hills.
The other thing you notice about the photos is that there's rarely anyone else in them, apart from Duncan himself. He takes these incredible self-portraits, high on ridges or alone at night in Bothies.
I've nearly always gone alone, and I've had many nights on the hills, yes, in the wee Phoenix foxhole tent.
And a lot of time spent in Bothies as well.
Yeah, yeah, quite a lot. I always like the smell of the wood smoke and just the general atmosphere of Bothies.
I know that you're someone who's quite likes your own company. You like spending time on your own in the hills and, you know, taking long walks solo up mountains, doing long journeys. And Bothies are a sort of odd place because sometimes you turn up and they're empty and you get a night of solitude. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're full of people. Mm-hmm. Which did you prefer?
Solitude.
After a while, you realise that Duncan's photographs, they're portraits of solitude. But there's one picture that stands out. It's a photograph of a young woman with blonde hair. She's sat in a dark bothy, really just a face surrounded by blackness. She's staring into the fire. Next to her are a pair of flimsy canvas shoes, propped up and drying. A smudge of steam shows a kettle that's about to boil. The photo's called The Angel of Camasunery. Now, Duncan first posted this picture on a web forum 10 years ago. He did that partly to tell the story behind it, but also half hoping, maybe even more than half hoping, that one day the story would find its way back to the young woman in the photograph. The young woman who interrupted his solitude one drizzly September evening, 35 years ago. I'm Christopher Slight, and this is Mountain. It's September 1981, and with a week off work, Duncan flies from Glasgow to Broadford on Skye on the Loganair Islander service. It was this small 16-seater twin-prop plane. He travels on to Elgol in the south of Skye and then begins the glorious coastal walk to Curuisk. About halfway is a wide grassy bay. It's grazed by sheep and Highland cattle and has these amazing views of the Isles of Egg and Rum. On the edge of the bay is a bothy, back then a single-storey cottage with a linked boathouse and three bedrooms, the Camasunery Bothy. I'll let Duncan take up the story. The other voice you'll hear is Penny Latin, reading the Bothy book extracts. Here's Duncan.
Camasunery, late September, 30-odd years ago. I was staying there on and off for a week. Then, as now, the bothy was well frequented, and the second night saw the arrival of a couple from the north of England on a bothying trip. In the course of the fireside crack, they mentioned having met a mysterious, solitary, barefooted girl who was in residence at Cambain. I, at the back of the room, then as now semi-detached, pricked up my ears at this. I wanted to ask what she was like, but feared that A, the question would appear objectionably sexist, and B, the answer would be that she was built like the back of a bus, thus destroying my fond imaginings. So I didn't. I went off for a couple of nights camping at Kuruusk, getting a good drubbing for my pains, then squelched back to the bothy to dry out. A half-day window of fine weather gave me a brilliant afternoon on Blavin, getting back about five to find, sitting at the table in the window recess, a breathtakingly beautiful, slightly built, blonde girl in jeans and a woolen jumper. Then I looked at her feet. Ah, I think you are the famous barefoot girl from Cambain, and I claim my £10. She smiled, which was more than that deserved. And I was smitten, more like poleaxed.
Cambain Bothy, 11th of September, 1981. Came from Glenafric. I am very wet and cold, and it's rainy and windy outside. I went wood gathering on the other side of the river. There was a rainbow, this strange, melancholy, oozing wet land with a brilliant, gleaming rainbow low over the hills. It was very beautiful. I'm going to stay here a while to heal my septic blisters and to think. The wood I got was very wet, and a miserable, mealy-mouthed little fire it is. I walked to Shield Bridge for supplies. Alas, no candles apart from fancy ones. The nearest are at Dorney. I ate in the cafe and then drank three pints in the Kintail Hotel, first drink for 2 weeks, and listened to the lugubrious but pleasant Gaelic ballads. The alcohol and chocolate biscuits I'd consumed did me in, and I grotesquely hobbled back here. I am now completely knackered, and I'm going to sleep.
I performed one or two chores for her, fetched water, and over dinner we, yes, even I, chatted. She was half Finnish, at odds with her parents, lived in a squat in London, worked for the Parks Department, was a committed vegetarian, hence the canvas rather than leather boots when the terrain or weather demanded footwear. She had travelled in the Middle East, but this was her first trip north, and she was in awe of the scale and loneliness of the Highlands, in love with it too.
15th September. It's my 21st birthday today, and my cuts still haven't healed, and it's misty, rainy, and cold. But I'm very glad I'm here.
Later, a young chap also from the London area came in. The conversation turned to this and that. And in the pretext of wood gathering, I withdrew and went outside for a think. Could I? Would she? Should I even try? I, leaden-footed and leaden-spirited, she an angel with wings. Could she teach me to fly, or would I drag her down to earth? In the gathering dusk, a small herd of hinds ambled down to the beach to nibble at the seaweed. Having learned already her love of these and all beasts, I went back in to fetch her, and hand in hand we stood in the thin, darkening drizzle watching them. Peace and stillness, the gentle rhythmic susurration of the sea, the closeness of Freya. There is a sense in which everything has gone downhill from this moment. Then we went back inside to sit around the fire till it died out. She was keeping an elaborate journal of her trip, and I diffidently asked if I might read a page of it. She selected a page and passed it to me, and I was astonished at the quality of her writing, the style and originality of thought. The Bothy book extract gives just a faint flavour of it.
12th September. Spasms of sunlight appearing on random hills. I've been for a long walk getting wood and am again soaked. Somebody left some pieces of Kendall mint cake. This is my 10th day without smoking and I am violently craving a cigarette. A tragic tale. 18th September. It's been raining non-stop all night and all day. The roof's leaking in several places and there's no more pans to catch the drips. I've been singing frenzied songs of praise to the sun, but it's completely ignoring me. It's raining hard down the chimney and all the dry wood is soaked. I have brilliant, very vivid dreams here, and extraordinary memories keep coming to me. I'm going to stay here a few more days, then go to Skye. As is obvious, I like doing things slowly.
Love, admiration, awe, reverence, I felt overwhelmed. Well, knowing I was building an edifice which my own inadequacies would undermine. I had to fly home the next morning, a Loganair Islander from Broadford to Glasgow, those were the days. With some misgivings, I extracted a promise from her that she would look me up if her eventual hitchhiking return took her through the city, thus giving her the chance to avoid a meeting without breaking her word. A week or two passed, then a phone call. She was at Central Station. Could I pick her up and give her a bed for the night? One night, two nights. What we did during the day, I really can't remember. I was in a haze of turmoil, head and heart in chaos and conflict. One clear image only, Pollock Park it must have been. The sound of the police pipe band practice was drifting over in the breeze. She standing with her back to me under a golden chestnut tree, sunlight dappling her golden hair, my heart dumb and full to bursting. I used to wonder whether if I had loved her less, I might have been less punctilious about the harm I would do her. Perhaps we could have worked the relationship through to its natural end, and she, sooner or later, realising what an awful mistake she had made, I coming to accept that the pedestal I had set her on was built of sand, and that instead of angel's wings, she had feet of clay, just like the rest of us. Loving her was at once the best and worst thing I could have done. Best, need I explain? Worst, the lack of a resolution left me trapped in an emotional blind alley. There have been other women, not many, I'm not the type, subjectively or objectively. Women who have shown me every comfort, one or two have even said they loved me before they got tired, and in the end sick of the lack of conviction with which I returned their love. After all, they weren't Freya. I let her go, bought her a train ticket to London. We exchanged a few letters, mine via her brother's address, but I've never seen her again. Call me 17 kinds of fool, I do myself, but I would never have been any good for her. I hope dearly that she's happy and fulfilled.
As the wheels turn beneath you, chasing future to your past, doubling your vision, falling tears on broken glass.
19th September. Again, very heavy rain and wind, and it's cold. What do other vegetarians do about walking boots? My gym shoes are wretched sores upon this earth. 21st September. Frenzied wind and rain all night and this morning. I'm off to Skye via Rattigan.
It's been a fantastic place to stay, and I'll be back someday. Freya Beasley. It's very strange to see this. Really strange.
Yes, I found Freya. Is that Freya?
Yes, you must be Chris.
I am Chris, yes. It's really good to talk to you. It's been quite a long journey to find you, actually.
How did you manage? I was very surprised.
Well, I'll reveal all and let you know what I'm up to. So, I mean, basically... Tell me just a little bit about you in 1981. What were you doing Where were you living? Were you at college? That sort of thing.
On that trip, I'd been working in a park, and I had just quit my job, and I'd been to Scotland a couple of years before and was smitten, and so I left my job in the park in London and just headed off to Scotland, intending I had about £100, I think, which was obviously more than it is now, and on that trip I was there for about 2 months, just going from bossy to bossy.
I know from one of your diary entries that I think you had your 21st birthday during the trip. So you're 21 and you're living in London at the time, I think, and you head off to Scotland for 2 months. And staying in bothies, sometimes they can be quite hard to find. You need a bit of local knowledge. I mean, how did you cope with that? Were you concerned, or you just thought, it'll work out, I'm off, let's go?
I had a tent, and I on those maps, I would get those very large-scale maps, and you could tell where they were. And I think somebody had given me a little scrappy kind of book with lots of different bothies in it, and then people would tell me where there was another one, and no, I wasn't worried.
Tell me about your boots and your feet, because that seemed to... That seemed to have been a feature of this trip.
Yes, I had some horrible old gym shoes. They were falling apart as I walked along, because obviously they'd get soaking wet every day, and they were an endless problem. But I did manage to glue them together, I think, at some point.
And this is because why didn't you have like a pair of proper leather, stout leather walking boots?
Well, at that point, I was a strict vegetarian, and the idea was appalling to wear leather. And also, I don't think it had even occurred to me when I set off. I thought I had a tent, and I thought that was a tent and a sleeping bag, and I thought that was pretty good.
I had an idea to do a whole series on bothies, and then that got me onto bothy books. And I had this idea of, maybe I could find really old bothy books and see if I can track people down and find out about their trip. And most of these books are not of that age, are just not in the bothies anymore. But your entries were transcribed by a chap called Duncan.
Duncan McCallum. What is Duncan McCallum?
Duncan McCallum. Does that name ring any bells?
Yes, yes, it does. Yes.
It does, it does. So tell me about that meeting with Duncan.
Yes, I got to Kamasunary, and I think maybe he was there already or the next day. And that was very nice meeting him. And we went on some walks together, a lot of talking. And we got on very well. He was an ardent bothy goer and climber. Is he still?
I think so, yeah. I think maybe slightly less than he used to be. I don't think he roams quite so much. I found him through his photographs, an incredible photographer.
Yes, yes. They were really beautiful. Yeah, he sent me a few years ago. They were lovely. He made calendars and all sorts of things.
Would you say that you were kindred spirits in a way?
In some way, yes. I can just remember we went down to the shore and the deer all came and gathered and came down from the mountains and were eating seaweed as we were standing there by the beach. They were just a few yards away from us.
And hand in hand we stood in the thin, darkening drizzle watching them. Peace and stillness, a gentle rhythmic susurration of the sea.
I think it's fair to say that this meeting had quite an impact on Duncan, actually. I think he still thinks about it. What are we talking about? 35 years ago. I think you made quite an impression.
That's nice to know. Well, he made an impression on me. He was very... a good person.
I obviously have got Duncan's email address. would you want it?
Yeah, that would be nice. I would.
Really good to talk to you, Freya.
Okay. And you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Freya Beasley.
Though there's chaos in the waters, the waves chase shadows over hills. Looking out this window, my whole world is standing still.
Huge thanks to Freya and, of course, to Duncan McCallum for sharing their stories. Editing help, as ever, for this episode was from Hugh Williams. Thanks very much to him and also to Penny Latin, who played the young Freya. You can hear Penny's brilliant science series on the BBC Radio iPlayer right now. Just search for Brainwaves. Music for this episode from Blue Dot Sessions, Kai Engel and Amy Sayer. More details on our website, mountainpodcast.com. If you go there, you can see Duncan's photograph, the photograph that started off this whole story, the Angel of Camasunary. You can also donate to Mountain on our website. Any contribution towards the cost of running the podcast is really appreciated. Just give whatever feels right to you and you'll be helping us find more incredible stories. Head to mountainpodcast.com/donate. Thank you, and thanks very much for listening today. I'm Christopher Slight, and this is Mountain.
Oh, I don't know what I-